Let's go ahead and do a roll call.
Caputo?
Here.
Dodell?
Here.
Berrigan? Can you unmute? Sorry. Here. Imtiaz?
Here.
Kappas?
Here.
Motahari?
Here.
And this, just to let you know that Dr. Harris, Dr. Kalamshi, and Dr. Fukami are not participating today for the record.
Thank you. And so we have a quorum?
Yes.
Awesome. And if I'm not mistaken, Karen, this is your first meeting. Welcome. We're so glad to have you and happy to have you be involved and participate. I did this last time when Umar joined us, so today is his second meeting. You are both our newest members, but I'll do it again once we get to that agenda item with respect to just sort of what we're – have you participated in any of these calls?
No. No, okay. I used to do a review of records, the investigative interview,
okay.
The review of records.
Awesome. So I'll sort of just give an overview of what our goals are and what we're doing with regards to this committee, and it'll just be a good refresher for all of us as well. Having said that, the last thing I want you to think is that there's any level of expertise beyond yours with this group. We've just been doing a little bit longer, but we're still a work in progress. Our goal, obviously, is just to do our due diligence as far as this committee is concerned and provide the best possible recommendations that we feel are appropriate to the full board. With that, though, I do want to get into our second agenda item, and that is any identification or declaration of conflict of interest by any of our board members regarding our committee members, excuse me, regarding any of the cases that are presented. And so, Karen, just for your purposes, if you've identified in your review of any of the cases a conflict, you're just going to call out that case. And usually what we do is call it out by agenda number as well as case number so that staff can appropriately identify it. And we'll go from there. David, I see your hand is up.
Well, I had some things to declare, so I was just letting you wait for you to call
perfect.
Me.
Perfect. You're up.
Okay. So for case number 20, agenda item 23, case 184, agenda item 31, case 214, those are former students of ours, so I just want that clear, but feel I can make a unbiased decision on it.
Okay. Oh. Umar.
Hey, Anthony. Case ending in 0129, IBB 13. He's a good friend of mine, so I'd like to recuse myself.
Okay. Anybody else? Mindy.
Yes, I have three of them. Case number 26, 00193. Case number 30, 0212. Case number 38, 0215.
And when you say three of them, are you recusing yourself from each
yes.
of those?
Okay. Yes.
So, Carrie, was that you who did roll earlier?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you do the roll call earlier?
I'm the roll call vote person.
Okay. So with those declared conflicts, what does that do to our quorum? Do we have just enough for a quorum with every member present?
Yeah, we have, there's six in attendance. So April will go ahead and help you with that.
Sure. Thanks, April. Go ahead.
Okay, so it looks like for the ones that Dodell declared that he could still continue.
Right.
So those ones would be fine. But for MTS and Motahari, that loses the quorum to do anything with those cases.
Okay. So just I'm going to go ahead and just highlight them on my end. Could you review those cases for me? April?
So I have down 4B13.
4B13. Is that 125?
Correct.
Okay.
No, 129.
129. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so let me redo that. And then I'll hold on just a second. I just have to clear this. Okay, 129. Go ahead.
Then I've got B26. That's 193.
193.
Looks like B30. That's 212.
212.
And then I believe it's B32. That's case 215.
215, got it. And are those correct, Mindy and Umar?
They are correct for mine.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. So those four cases will be held off. We won't discuss them because we don't have a quorum. And just to go back to the roll call, Terry, the folks that you identified not participating, are they coming in later or they're not participating at all?
No, there was some question as far as Dr. Fukami. They mentioned that she could be in or out, but my understanding is I got and received an email from Yasmin, and she said that she was not going to be in attendance.
Okay, that's fine. So then we will go ahead and just make note of those four. And just to make sure I'm accommodating for everybody, are there any other conflicts that anybody else needs to identify? Is that everybody? Okay. So with that, we are now on to our next agenda item, which is number three. And basically what we need to do here is approve minutes. We have two meeting minutes to review and approve. Hopefully the review has been done. So I'm going to start with the minutes from October 11th, which I think occur on start on page 4 of your packet, and ask if there's any discussion regarding the minutes of October 4th, 2022. If there are no comments or discussions to be made, can I get a motion for approval?
Motion. Dodell.
Second.
I second.
Second, Imtiaz. Okay, roll call.
Caputo.
Yes.
Dodell.
Yes.
Berrigan.
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. Moving right along, starting on page 12 of your packet, are the minutes from November 8th, 2022. Any discussion on those minutes? Seeing and hearing none. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of November 8th, 2022?
Dodell, motion.
Second?
I second.
Dodell and Imtiaz, first and second. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, that's it for agenda item 3. So now we are on to agenda item 4, and that's our review, discussion, and possible action on board recommendations for a listing of cases that we've been provided. So going back to what I was mentioning earlier as an overview, our goal in this committee, first off, is that we all did our due diligence and reviewed all the cases. And have some position that we are holding regarding those cases, whether we feel those cases should be dismissed, whether there's action to be taken anywhere from letter of concern to non-disciplinary action to a disciplinary action. We will have that discussion and gain a consensus on each of the cases that we end up discussing and make those recommendations to the full board accordingly. So what we see listed today, I think, are in the neighborhood of 40 or so cases for us to review. There are two sets of cases, starting with some outstanding cases and then going into our current listing of cases. One of the things that we had started a few meetings back, and it seems like we're managing this pretty well at this point, is we're going to start with a consent calendar. And basically what that means is that I will go over a listing of cases that are being recommended for dismissal. How this works is that once that list is provided, I will then ask if there are any other members that would like to identify any cases that they are recommending for dismissal. Once we've exhausted all member input regarding cases for dismissal, the next order of business will be to see if there are any members that want to remove any cases from that listing. We don't have a discussion on that at this point. The only thing that I am going to do that I haven't done before, and so I'll ask for staff help on this, but I will ask that the person removing it identify themselves so that when we get to that item, you will be the person to speak initially with regards to why you wanted to further discuss that particular case. So we're going to look to you as the primary in terms of the discussion for that particular case, okay? And the reason why I just want to identify yourself, I just think it's helpful from my purposes, and also make sure we know who to identify so we're not guessing when we do get to a case that's been removed for any reason. That's sort of the overview. There are a couple of questions that have been raised, and I have a couple, David, and if you're okay with it, I'll just put mine out there, and then we'll kind of move on to you.
Sure.
So the one thing I did want to identify, and this would just require staff feedback on this, in our previous discussions on disciplinary action and violation identification, we've been referring to ARS 32-1201, 14 and 24. And what we have agreed upon or understood, I think since our last meeting at least, is that 14 was changed to 13 and 24 was changed to 25. And I just want to make sure that that is correct. And in identifying the accuracy of those numbers, I just want to know if that's listed anywhere, because even in our packet, when I'm looking at that, it still looks like it's the old nomenclature. So I just want to make sure we're consistent in our identification of the process. So if someone could respond to that, I would appreciate it.
Yes, those are the numbers that you would use, 13
so, and 25. Okay, so even though they're not updated in any documents that we have, that's still the appropriate referral.
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. I just want to make sure. So for our purposes, if you want to say 14, we'll correct you to 13. And if you want to say 24, we'll correct you to 25. David.
Sure. And I don't know if my question is more for staff or for the attorney. On a lot of these cases, I noticed that there was difficulty getting records, and that made the consultant's job even harder because they were running after records. When the subpoena is sent out to the dentist named, and if they're a former employer of a business entity, and that business entity is the custodian of the record, which I assume they are, is the any penalties or decisions about not being in compliance with the subpoena now be against the named dentist or the entity? And if the entity is not registered as a business entity, then what's that? Where does that leave us?
I think you guys can take care of that. This is Seamus Monahan, Assistant Attorney General. Okay, so let me take your first question. As far as the records go, I know that there's been a lot of back and forth about this, and I think it's also a practical situation. You know, if you don't work somewhere and they won't release the records to you, you know, there may not be a lot of recourse for you, and so you are kind of stuck in this perpetual violation stage. But if you have followed all the correct protocols, then, you know, really you have handed off the custody of those records. And so then if the entity doesn't want to provide them, you can always subpoena the entity. And if they're not a registered entity, but they are owned, you know, by a sole practitioner or a situation like that, then you would just subpoena that sole practitioner. And if there were any issues at that point, the board would then go to enforce the subpoena in a superior court.
Got it. So if I understand you right, Shane, Seamus, that the probably the better protocol with these things is if the dentist cannot supply the records because they're with an entity of some type, then it would be best for the board to re-subpoena the records from that entity as the custodian.
I mean, you know, I think, as I said, practically, that is just sometimes the only way that those records can be gotten. And so if the board wants access to them and wants them quicker, then yes, subpoenaing them themselves would be easier than trying to, you know, force the doctor to attempt to get them over and over again. Does that make sense?
No, I totally understand the practicality, and I don't feel it's fair actually to the doctor if he can't get them to be penalized for that because he's not the custodian or she's not the custodian. So I was just trying to think as I read some of these, how to deal with them, because there are a couple that came up that records are incomplete, et cetera, and figuring out who should be responsible for not being in compliance with the subpoena for those incomplete records.
Yeah. And that's a great question. And again, it's up to you guys. And so what I really think, you know, when you're making your recommendations, to look at the facts surrounding that, you know, did they let the patient know? Did they send out a letter to the patient saying that, you know, they were no longer going to be working there, not the custodian, as per the statute requires? You know, those are the kind of things that you're going to want to think about.
Got it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Any other questions from the committee? Okay, so we are now moving into agenda item 4, and I will go to my list here, and just so everybody's on the same page as the committee is, as well as staff, because I know we have some folks that have participating in the meeting. We have another document that we refer to, and it's basically a notes document. So I'm referring to this particular Excel spreadsheet, and there's nothing on there that's not already available. It's just a worksheet for board members. So that's what I'm referring to now. I'm going to go over the cases that I am recommending for dismissal. As I've done in the past, I will identify the agenda item and then the case number. We all know we're in agenda item 4, so I won't say the 4, but we do have different items within 4 A and B, so I'll go over those and then the case number. Okay? So, here we are. Agenda item A4, case number 2022-00226. Agenda item B1, case number 2021-00101. Agenda item B2, 2022-00105. Agenda item B3, case number 2021-00124. Agenda item B5, case number 2022-0079. Agenda item B6, 2022-00087. Agenda item B7, case number 2022-00091. Agenda item B8, case number 2022-00105. Agenda item B9, case number 2022-00115. Agenda item B10, case number 2022-00116. Agenda item B11, case number 2022-00118. Agenda item B12, case number 2022-00125. Agenda item B14, case number 2022-00131. Agenda item B15, case number 2022-00133. Agenda item B16, case number 2022-00141MP. Agenda item B18, case number 2022-00173. Agenda item B20, case number 2022-00177. Agenda item B21, 2022-00181. Agenda item B22, case number 2022-00183. Agenda item B27, case number 2022-00194. Agenda item B28, case number 2022-00196. Agenda item B29, case number 2022-00199. Agenda item B34, case number 2022-00223. So at this time, I would like to ask any committee members if there are any cases that they would like to also add to that list of dismissals to recommend to the full board. Seeing and hearing none, what I'd now like to do is ask if there are any committee members that would like to remove any of the items that have been identified for dismissal that were listed previously. And again, if you are asking for that, please identify yourself and then the case number. Seeing or hearing none, we will now make a motion. I'll accept a motion to recommend those listed cases. And staff, did we get that listing okay?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Hey, Dr. Caputo.
Yes.
I believe there's one on here, the malpractice matter, and it looks like there was a settlement in that. In the past, you know, because I know under 1263.03, the investigative committee may not terminate a complaint if a court has entered a medical malpractice judgment against the licensee. It looks like this was in Superior Court. So I'm not sure that we can terminate it. But I guess, you know what, I apologize. You're making a recommendation for dismissal. I got ahead of myself. Good learning moment for me.
No problem. Nope, that's fine, and I appreciate it. No, that's what we're here for. So at this point, can I get a motion to approve that listing to be sent to the full board for recommendation of dismissal?
No doubt.
I approve.
So we'll do first Motihare, second Dodell. Any further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
MTIs?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihare?
Yes.
Okay. So now will we move into those cases that were not identified? So the first case that we have is agenda item A1, case number 2022-00010. And just give me a moment to get back on that case. Basically, what I'm seeing on my end is that this is a situation where the identified licensee is not involved, and the consultant recommendation was for dismissal against the licensee, but we need to talk about opening up a new case towards the dentist that was identified. And I also wanted to ask about a possible violation of 32120123, and I'd call you guys, the committee, to go to page 31. And there is the identification of not following the subpoena, and as a result, not fully compliant with the subpoena request. So that's where I want to start off on, and I would like to open it up for discussion.
Yeah, Anthony, I agree with you. This needs to be moved on to the other practitioner, and I believe the bridge failed after one day. So placement according to the complaints. And for subpoena, I believe this is a corporate office. So leading with what Dr. Dodell was saying, if we're not getting the proper information, we might have to go the route of receiving the records from the corporate entity.
Okay. So anybody else? Go ahead.
Yeah, so this is Dave Dodell. If we're going to reopen it, that kind of gives a opportunity for the records to be reobtained at that point.
All right. So if there's no issue regarding the subpoena, the non-compliance of subpoena, does anybody else have a thought about that just to make sure? Okay. So what we need to do then is, we need a motion to dismiss the complaint against McCartan is the licensee identified, and we'll handle that separately. Yes, Seamus?
Yes.
Okay. So is there a motion to dismiss against McCartan?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Who was the, was that Dr. Berrigan?
Yeah, I was first.
So Berrigan first, Dodell second. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
MTIs?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. So now we move on to, and someone correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but it looks like the identified practitioner is Baruga.
Correct.
And I guess we need to do, well, Seamus, you can maybe help us on this, but we want to open up this new complaint, but we also want to make sure that we're going to the right entity to get the records. So do we just start with the complaint against the dentist and then follow that subpoena process accordingly? Or can we make a special request that we need the full records, or that just happens?
That should happen when you send the subpoena. So you could just recommend they open the case and open the case on the new doctor and subpoena his records.
Okay. So thank you. So can I get a motion to recommend to the board to open up a new case against Baruga?
I make a motion.
Dodell,
first, Berrigan, second, Dodell. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
MTIs?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. Next case, our agenda item is A2, and it's case number 2022-00109. This is a similar case in terms of our presentation, in terms of requesting opening up a new case, but I think that there was an issue that I wanted to address in my notes with the committee, and that is on, hold on just a sec. It was the use of this CDT code D4355, whether it was appropriate, and I'm looking at a possible violation of 3212.0101.23 and going to page 147. So maybe starting there and seeing if there's any discussion with respect to that code. I guess if there anybody that can sort of speak to what that code is doing or not, it didn't seem like it was appropriate for this patient, and that's why I think I'm trying to drill down a little bit on.
Anthony, was this the case also where there was no doctor to do the exam and they just started treatment?
Correct. And I'm wondering if it was because of this code. Because the code itself, when I looked it up, said that because of the buildup of plaque and calculus, it's the person doing the exam, and I'm only saying that because I'm concluding that it could be a hygienist or a dentist, can't really do it until that is removed. But when I looked at this patient's x-rays, it kind of was hard for me to wrap my head around that particular code. And that's what I'm looking for a little direction on, if anybody has a sense of that.
Can you tell me one more time what was the code you were talking about?
It's 4355, if I remember correctly.
Which is a code, this is CAPAS, it is a code that's used to enable a comprehensive exam. So it doesn't make any sense to have a dental exam before that. It can't be done. So the dental exam has to occur after, just by definition of the code. And the same way, I think, with gathering x-rays, because I think the consultant also had an issue with the hygienist taking x-rays prior to an exam. But that doesn't make any sense to me either, because the dentist can't finish an exam until there's the appropriate x-rays taken. So sure. I think that's pretty common. But whether or not the 4355 was actually indicated is, I think, a worthy discussion, because I had the same question when I looked at the images and so on.
So understanding that, go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to add on to that. So I agree with what everything's been said, is the code defines that it's done before a comprehensive exam. However, you have to have a dentist make the diagnosis to get to that code. So it should have been a limited exam or something, some indication that the dentist examined the patient to say, hey, I can't make a complete diagnosis till this is done. So was that done is, I guess, the question. Was a dentist, because that seems to be the biggest thing. Was a dentist involved before the patient started getting treatment at all?
Right. I feel like I want to split that hair a little bit. I'm not so hung up that the dentist didn't see the patient before, but I would be concerned if the dentist didn't see the patient at all. And I don't know that there's any indication that the dentist even saw the patient for that appointment. Would that seem accurate from everybody's review?
Yes.
Okay. So is there a violation with respect to the dentist not, in this particular case too, so we're on the same page, this is the licensee identified in the complaint. We still have to deal with the new case on this as well, but at least to start with the licensee, Espinoza, where are we at then in terms of action? I'm looking at 32.1201.23, and I'm just wondering if others feel the same way.
And I believe that one has changed to 24. Dr. Caputo, were you discussing non-compliance with the subpoena?
No. I was looking at, let me tell you what that is. I should do that. I'm looking at, I'm sorry. It was 20. Yeah, it's failure to comply with it. So I'm talking about two separate things. I appreciate the clarification. So no, I'm just wondering, do we need to address then this issue with the dentist not doing an exam? Seems like that's where we're headed.
Go ahead, Deb.
Yeah, just a clarification then. So your concern is that, you know, because I couldn't find any evidence that the doctor actually saw the patient on that day, but it does seem like the doctor saw the patient and potentially looked at x-rays in the interim. And then there was other treatment done the next day. Am I remembering that correctly? In which case the doctor's exam could have occurred then?
So you're looking at a timeline of acceptance then that at least it was done on another day.
Right. And in a reasonable time frame before any other treatment might have ensued.
Okay. So there's
I'm not thinking of it as a hygienist who worked in offices, you know, even clear back into the 1970s, where some of these decisions based on standing protocols that were established in the office, the hygienist is given leeway to go ahead with gathering certain diagnostic information and so on without necessarily the doctor seeing the patient at that moment. Okay. As long as no other treatment is ongoing.
And that's why you're here, David.
So Deb, I would agree with you on that for the radiographs as having kind of a standard protocol, but I'm still hung up about making the decision that a debridement needs to be done. So how, I guess the question is, who made the decision that a comprehensive exam could not be done if the dentist didn't look at it? That's where I'm hung up. If the code is basically saying the debridement is to enable a comprehensive exam, shouldn't the dentist have made that decision versus a hygienist who's not doing the comprehensive exam? And I'm saying this in all respect out of hygienists. I've had, you know, great hygienists too, but to me, that's kind of implying that a dentist made that decision that he or she could not do the comprehensive exam. So should have seen the patient before billing out for that code. That's the way I read it.
I have a comment. When you look through the records, there is description that general health, generally 2 to 3 millimeter pockets with localized 4 millimeter pockets, heavy bleeding. You should still be able to see.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. All right.
Yeah, I think, yeah, going back to the original comment I made, you know, whether the 4355 was even indicated, you know, is certainly a worthy discussion. So I would rather focus on that rather than.
But maybe that begs the question of having the dentist involved, right? So, and I think maybe that's what David's alluding to a little bit. So.
Yes.
Would a letter of concern be appropriate here?
I would be comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So from a staff perspective, I think a letter of concern identifying the importance of the dentist being involved with the decision-making for treatment is important, and also appropriate use of diagnostic codes for treatment be consistent with the patient presentation. That sound reasonable to folks?
Yes.
I think it sounds reasonable.
Okay. So can I get and any other comments? Mindy, did you have anything to add?
I actually was going to say also it makes a difference if this is a normal practice or a routine way or not. So a letter of concern, it wakes them up a little bit, kind of like, do you always do surgical extraction automatically, or do you look at things? So I think it would help to know if this is a normal practice, because I've seen so many times, and I agree that the dentist has to look at it, but if the hygienist looks, and it doesn't show on the x-ray as much, if the plaque is heavy, you have patients that brush once a year when they come to see the dentist, those happen a lot, and not necessarily that they're perio patients, so you still could have very shallow pockets with heavy plaque. I mean, there are people that just don't brush, and sometimes, believe it or not, they don't get deep pockets. But I think it's a good letter of concern, just because we don't know if this is a normal practice,
sure.
Routine way of taking care of the patient or not. That's okay. All I would add.
Okay. And did staff get the direction of that letter of concern? Okay.
Could you just recapture it real quick?
Sure. So we just want to send a letter of concern to the dentist that the importance of being involved with the decision-making process regarding patient care and treatment as soon as possible when patients are seen for treatment, as well as being thoughtful about the appropriate use of diagnostic codes for treatment and their appropriate application. Deb, you had something to add?
Yeah, I just want to, I think this discussion is worthy because I think this was a new patient. Do I recall that correctly? New patient to the practice?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I think it makes a difference if it's a returning patient, and at some point the doctor has seen that patient and done an exam, and the hygienist is working under general supervision. Then I think, you know, certain protocols get are more established between the hygienist and the doctor regarding that particular patient. Do you see what I'm kind of getting at? I think the stipulation needs to be, the letter of concern needs to be like focused on a new patient.
Okay. So we would include when seeing new patients.
Got it.
I think that's fair. Okay. And April, did you get that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. All right. So any further discussion on that recommendation? So can I get a motion to approve the recommendation for a letter of concern as content as discussed?
No doubt.
So we have Berrigan and Dodell first and second. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Mumtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, so then we need to go to page 146. And I believe 147. And what you see on 146 is of the allegations presented, there was one substantiated for the lack of consent. And as identified by the consultant, that didn't involve the complaint, the licensee that was complained against in this case. So we would need to recommend the board open up a new complaint with Dr. Chinarakirti regarding the lack of consent for treatment. And any comments on that? Seeing none, can I get a motion to make that recommendation to open up a new complaint with Dr. Chinarakirti? Don't be shy.
Motion, Dodell.
Dodell. Deb, just since you smiled and I can see you, we'll say you seconded.
I second.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Mumtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas? Motihari?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, so now this we are now on agenda item A3, case number 2022-00130. This seems to mirror our first case in that the consultant identified that a different dentist was involved, and as such, recommending dismissal against Dr. Barrett and opening up a new complaint against, and I just want to make sure I have this correctly, even though I can go to my other notes, Dr. Mehrenfar. Any comments on that?
No, I'm in agreement.
Okay. So seeing none, we'll handle this separately as we did previously. Can I get a motion to recommend to the board to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Barrett?
Motion.
Make a motion.
So we have Berrigan and Dodell again. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes, sorry.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Mumtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. Now we're on to Dr. Mehrenfar. Can I get a motion to recommend to the board to open a new complaint as identified by the consultant against this dentist?
Motion.
Mumtiaz, second.
Dodell.
Dodell, further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
My apologies, yes.
Mumtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. We are now on agenda item B4, case number 2021-00131. Let me just get there. 0131. Here we are. So if I look at my notes on this, just to get the discussion started, I do see a violation here, specifically with 32.12.01.01.13. And so we'll start there. And I also see a call for restitution, which I agree with. So let's start there with the committee. Is there agreement that there is a violation of 32.12.01.01.13?
I agree.
Okay. Any other discussion regarding the violation?
Do we want to add
records?
Yeah. 25. Yeah, records would be 25.
Did I see that or just did I miss it?
Yeah, there's discussion about no exams, no perioral probe.
Oh, yep, I see it. Okay. Okay, fine. Thank you. Further discussion.
Go ahead.
Yes?
Hey,
can you go to the... Oh, someone's on their phone. All right. So at this point, and Kerrigan and maybe, Karen Kerrigan.
It's okay.
And Umar, maybe as a review a little bit for you. So what we do at this point is if there is an agreement that there is a violation, what we're basically deciding on is how we're going to handle it in a disciplinary or non-disciplinary manner. But we vote on the violation first. So I guess if we didn't think there was a violation, we could do a non-disciplinary. So that would probably be a reasonable thought. But that's where we're at now, just to kind of make sure both of you are up to speed with where we're at. So can I get a motion to accept a violation of 32.12.01.01.13 and 25?
This is Kappas. I move that we recommend the board find the violation of 32.12.01.01.13 and 25 based on the consultant's conclusions.
Okay.
Dodell.
Second. Dodell.
Yep.
Any further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo.
Yes.
Dodell.
Yes.
Berrigan.
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
All right. So now what do we do in terms of our recommendation for this violation? To start us off, I am recommending CE, the amount to be determined, but in the areas of diagnosis and treatment planning, as well as implants, as well as, let's just start there on the CE part and let's see what kind of consensus we can get on that recommendation. And I do want to just kind of go back. I know we've had this discussion before, but as a reminder to me, we talked about CE and record keeping kind of takes care of all of this. Is that the same discussion or am I wrong on that?
I believe it was risk management.
Oh, risk management. That's what it was. That's risk management. Thank you. So if we did risk management, that takes care of diagnosis treatment plan. Okay. So are folks in agreement with risk management CE as well as implant CE? And in implant CE, is there an area that we're looking at?
Probably the surgical side versus the restorative side because of the meds, et cetera.
Implant treatment planning and placement?
Correct.
Okay. And numbers, I had sort of thought 4 and 4. Is there a different number? I know that, David, you've often helped us on how we get to these numbers realistically.
I think 4 for the risk management is fine. I think for the implant planning, and maybe go to 6, because that mean having exposed threads is, that's a pretty...
Okay. I don't know. I'm totally with you. So we're recommending disciplinary CE in the amount of 4 CEUs in risk management and 6 CEUs in implant diagnosis and treatment planning. Okay. If there's not a lot of heartache here, and just because of where we're at with this, I was in agreement with the amount of restitution identified by the consultant, and it looks like that amount totaled, I guess we didn't get a real total amount other than it says insurance should be refunded $1,369.40 and the patient should be refunded $3,649.
Mm-hmm.
Are we verifying? Can I get a verification to that, or is there any numbers there that are missed?
I saw the same numbers, but I didn't go through a line by line check on them. But I think we can make sure that staff does.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. That's fine. All right. So we'll basically recommend that amount, but request confirmation of the correct amount. But there is an amount that, from what the consultant identified, that's due back to insurance and the patient, as reflected in the report. Any comments about restitution? Anybody feel one way or the other, or we're okay to move forward? Okay, so basically we're at the point of having a motion to recommend, as far as action to the full board, disciplinary CE as previously identified for risk management and implant placement, our diagnosis and placement, and then restitution in the amount identified in the consultant's report. And staff, did you get the numbers okay, or do I need to repeat any of that?
No, we got it. Thank you.
Okay. So can I get a motion to approve that recommendation to the full board?
I'll make a motion.
Okay. Berrigan first, second.
I second.
Second, Imtiaz. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihare?
Yes.
Okay. That takes us to agenda item B17, case number 2022-00162. Let me just get there on my agenda. So, and we said 17, right? Yep. There we are. Okay. So what I'm looking at on this is agreement with the consultant. And I'm just getting down to that page, so just bear with me for a sec. Basically, the allegation of inadequate endodontic treatment is substantiated. And I am looking at violation of 32-1201-13. So discussion on violation of that statute. Dodell.
So I have kind of mixed feelings about this. I agree with the consultant about the quality of the endo done. However, he did recognize that and said, you know, you need to go see an endodontist. So breaking a file is not, to me, below the standard of care. If the dentist informs the patient he broke it, et cetera, if it was in the consent. So I'm more thinking of this maybe as possibly a letter of concern than an actual violation.
Okay. Other input from the committee?
There was no notes on like working length or anything, I believe.
Right. Mm-hmm. Correct.
No rubber dam either, so that's why it's not below standard care.
So he didn't write down rubber dam, but I believe during the interview he said he uses rubber dam for all his endo.
Correct.
So it's kind of a he said, she said.
Right, but at the same time, as we've all learned, if it's not in the chart, then it didn't happen. And so the fact that it wasn't charted, and I think it also lends itself to the fact that as the consultant concluded, not having working lengths, there was a significant lack of documentation. And while I agree with you, David, about the breaking of the file, and I believe you're right, I just think that the lack of documentation and appropriate treatment of the tooth, I think does rise to a level of a violation that way. That's kind of where I'm at.
So what about approaching this more from a risk management issue than the endo issue because of the documentation? Okay. I guess where I'm thinking is yes, I agree. The file broke. It was overextended. He identified it. I don't want to see someone punished for a bad outcome and making the appropriate referral, which is to me the standard of care, and setting a precedent saying that it isn't. But I would agree with everyone else. The documentation needs to be brought up. So I guess that's the way I'm looking at it, is it's more the documentation lens, the rubber dam not being documented, et cetera, than it is. I mean, yes, the endo was less than ideal, but how we weren't there. Did we know that it was just a difficult canal and it broke and they just, you know.
That's fine, but the gutta percha did go beyond the apex, right?
And I'm okay with that one. If you want to get it for that, but I think we need to make it. I guess I want to make sure it's clear that it's the because of the apex, not because of the broken file and making the referral.
I'm fine with that, but I hear what you're saying, and I am absolutely with you. There was the attempt to say, let's get you to a specialist.
Right.
I'm fine with that.
Because I've been involved with others that the dentist broke the file, never informed the patient, never made the referral, and then it came back, and those I agree, are definitely below the standard of care. This one, I'm kind of more on the border of on that part of it, but I agree with everyone else about the documentation and the overfill.
So what I'm hearing is there would be acceptance in a non-disciplinary recommendation.
I think that would be, from my point of view, yes.
And Mindy or Umar, what are your thoughts?
I'm fine with that.
I'm fine with that too, but I see what David is trying to say is not to penalize a general dentist trying to do something, but at the same time, looking at this, I think understanding that some things are beyond the scope of general dentists and not to even attempt it is not a bad thing for everybody to have. And right. I think this is what happened. So I'm fine with non-disciplinary, honestly. Just something that brings attention to this person and say, if something is beyond your scope, just don't do them before you get into trouble.
But Mindy, I would disagree with you because I know some general dentists that have limited themselves to endo that does do endo better than some endodontists I've seen. So
I agree, but apparently person is not. Otherwise, they wouldn't move on.
No, and I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying I don't want to make generalizations that because he's a general dentist that he's not capable of doing it. That's all I'm saying.
So, David, let me ask you this just as a question.
Sure.
You do root canals or have done root canals?
I've have done a one or two in my past, and I personally would have referred that because I think it's beyond my capability to do well because I know my limitations in doing root canals. I'm not saying it's past any general dentist's limitation to do it.
Okay, and that's kind of what I was getting at. I mean, I'm looking at that tooth. I'm considering it's a second molar, so it's in a challenging position.
Right.
That is a fairly curved mesial buccal root.
Right. No, and Tony, I don't disagree, but as I said, I know some general dentists that can easily manage that case too.
Fair enough.
I don't think we should start tagging things saying this is a case for a general versus a specialist.
No, it's not. Yeah. And it's not so much that, it's just making sure we're having
we're on the same page.
Yeah. All right. So
I'm being feisty today.
So what I'm hearing is a non-disciplinary recommendation for this dentist in the area and to recommend 4 units of risk management. But what I'd like to do based on what I'm hearing everybody, and maybe I can direct staff to this to make it a little bit easier, but we're sort of forming the recommendation on risk management in the area of diagnosis and treatment, but sort of focusing on the comments that are on, let me just make sure I'm there, because I think this kind of does it better than what we've been doing. So hold on. It's on page 2603, and it's that investigator's conclusion, in that our concern is ensuring that a rubber dam is always used, making sure working and final lengths are obtained when doing root canal therapy. Is that fair to everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So, and did that make sense to staff, what I was referring to there?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So then I'd like to make a motion that we recommend to the board a non-disciplinary action of 4 units of CE and risk management to sort of emphasize the point on page 2603 regarding the investigator's conclusion. Can I get a motion?
Dodell.
Second?
Berrigan.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
MTIs?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. So next is agenda item B19, case number 2022-00175. So,
Caputo,
yes.
can I interrupt you right here? So I received an email this morning that didn't have time to put in the board packet. The doctor has offered a refund to the patient of $6,822. It's not clear yet if the patient has accepted it, but they wanted the committee to know that the offer has been made.
And April, could you give that amount again?
$6,822.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. So what we see here, and this is not an easy one. I'm sure we all kind of saw that as we reviewed it. A lot of stuff happening and going on. But based on the investigator's conclusion and the allegations that were made, allegation one, improper dental treatment related to the Crowns, is not substantiated. But there is a substantiation for a refund for incomplete treatment, which has not been provided to the patient. And so we just heard that there was a offer made to the patient. So I guess one of the things, and maybe Seamus or our staff can help us out with this, we can just still make the recommendation to make that restitution despite it already being offered. Would that be appropriate, Seamus?
Yes, it would.
Okay. So is there discussion? I guess what I was trying to understand based on the restitution, and I'm just looking at my notes, so hold on for a second here. I want to make sure of my if you guys go to, and this is where I'm kind of just trying to understand, and this might be something that needs to be meted out a little bit further, but I would direct you to page 2892. And I'm going to get there myself. I believe it's that. I hope it is. I made some notes, and that's why I'm just trying to get there, so I apologize. Okay. Let me see. I'm almost there. I apologize. I just want to make sure I'm directing. Yeah, it looks like. All right. So what I'm looking at on that particular page is it looks like it's a treatment plan, and then there's the fee and then the patient total. And I think that's where that amount that was originally in question came up, that because the patient had said they made it, they had a charge of $24,440, which seems to include the things that are listed there. And so if that included the treatment that wasn't completed, which my understanding was it was, none of it was completed because of the situation the patient was in and not wanting to continue with care. I'm looking at all those Crowns and retainers and Pontics. Do other people feel the same about that, or am I not reading that correctly?
In what respect do you mean, do we feel the same?
Well, is that this, do you feel that that's the treatment that wasn't completed, was what's listed on there? Because it seems to me that's where that $24,000 that the patient was charged. So, for example, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, about 15 line items for Crowns, and then there's a bridge in there. And they're all at $1,500 each. But wouldn't that be the treatment that wasn't completed, or am I reading that incorrectly? That's what I mean.
Good question.
Because when I did my calculations on that, I come up with a total of $21,000. For all of that treatment listed. So if there was treatment done there, and maybe this is just something for the board to look at further, but I'm just wondering on the restitution, is that the amount that we're looking at because that treatment wasn't completed as identified by the consultant?
Anthony, I think the doctor on this case has their hand raised.
Unfortunately, the licensees cannot speak.
Yeah, I don't think we can have anybody, even though it's a public meeting, Umar, there's no participation from anybody besides the committee as well as staff and then our attorney. So we would just we could direct that. the board to look into this further is what I'm saying. That would be one of our options. I just want to make sure that the numbers are correct. So I'm just asking the committee members, when you guys reviewed this, did you see the numbers the same or differently? Ryan, go ahead.
Hey, so if you want, this is one of those things that we talked about briefly last meeting. As a committee, you can always invite the licensee in for an investigative interview, which is something that the board cannot do. Sometimes I think an investigative interview, having one of those would maybe not prevent, but help the board to avoid having to do their own formal interviews on certain things. So if that's something you wanted to do, you could invite her to that, and then she could come and answer questions before the committee, but it would be at a future meeting.
Okay.
So this is Kappas. Just as a clarification, Ryan, given that she's here, does that mean that it still has to be at another meeting?
So you may want to get legal advice from Seamus on this. From our understanding, the committee was developed to not include, I'll say, cooperation from the licensee during your meetings because it's your just to decide. But if they're here and they're willing to answer a question, Seamus may be able to provide a better response than me.
Yeah, Seamus, I am just looking at statutes again, but I would say for the purposes of this committee, that generally means when you're inviting somebody in, I don't know if I would get into a practice of allowing people to discuss the matters with you, as that could significantly draw the matters out longer.
Yeah. So I think that if here's my comment to the committee. If we're not clear on the amount, but basically everything I read in the report, the final treatment was not completed for this patient. And that's what the patient is presenting in their complaint with regards to the amount that was charged and that they paid. And as far as I saw, there was an amount of $24,440 that was charged to their credit card. And that is consistent with what I just listed on that page with those charges. So my presentation would be, based on my numbers, that it's the $21,000 that I mentioned. If we're not in agreement on that, then I would propose that we do refer this to an investigative interview. I just want to make sure that number's appropriate. That's all. If we're going to make, if there's an agreement for restitution, then that's fine. The other thing that may happen if we ask for this investigative interview is that if the patient accepts the offer by the dentist in this particular case for the amount that was done, maybe that would resolve it there as well. I don't know, but my sense is that might be a factor too. Since at this time we don't know if the patient has accepted that offer from the dentist at this point. So thoughts about that from the committee?
I'm fine with that.
All right. So there's a recommendation to refer this to the investigative committee regarding what the actual amount of the restitution is due to the patient based on the crowns not being completed. Is that a fair assessment of what we're discussing right now?
I agree.
Okay. So let's just start with that. There is another issue I want to address, but I think it's secondary to this anyways. So I would entertain a motion to make a recommendation to have a investigative interview. And so, Ryan, we're making this to the board, and then the board will do it, or we can just do it ourselves?
So the committee will do the investigative interview.
So you don't need to make a recommendation.
All right. So we're making a decision to have an investigative interview with the licensee regarding the restitution amount.
Correct.
So is there a motion to approve a investigative interview with this licensee regarding restitution?
Yes.
Well, I would make a motion.
So we have MTS and Berrigan. Further discussion.
So, you know, basically the patient abandoned the doctor. So, you know, it looks like everything is just an argument over money at this point.
Mm-hmm. Regarding the treatment, you're correct. And we can also maybe look into that as well through this interview, but I just want to get that number sort of understood. Was it I think we can handle that through the interview as well. So I'm fine with what you're saying.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, all right. Further discussion. Okay. So, Umar, did you have something?
No.
Okay. So we are going to take a roll call on the motion to convene an investigative interview with the licensee regarding treatment and restitution as identified in the consultant's report. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. So there is another issue here that I need to bring up, and I'm going to call your attention to page 2861. And I also need to ask a question of staff, if you can do it. But it's just something that I saw listed in on the website. So if you look on page 2861, it's a chart entry for when some crown preps were done, as well as crown lengthening. And if you go down to where it starts and it says all consents and post-op forms signed and completed, and then the third line down, it says nitrous oxide at 60% for 6 hours. Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. Starting at the second line, patient was given Halcyon 0.5 milligrams crushed under tongue when she arrived. So what I wanted to ask staff is that in the directory listing, it said that the dentist had a permit, but it's been withdrawn. Do we know the date of that withdrawal? Or is there a way to find that out?
Oh.
So no. I totally forgot about this. So she submitted a permit. I think she, and this can come out through the investigative interview. I understand she's here, probably can refute what I'm saying, but what I believe to be true is she submitted a permit application for a 1301 or 1302 permit, and she, I'll say, failed, for lack of a better word, and so she resubmitted and failed again, and then it went before the board to allow her to withdraw her application for anesthesia sedation permit. And from what I understand, that is what has occurred. I can double check if you want to take a comfort break, and we can confirm that, or you can move on and we can come back to this thing. But yeah, she does not have a permit to administer anesthesia or sedation or any drugs related thereto.
What I do know is that the dentist does have a 1304.
Yes.
And so there is a permit to work with a CRNA or physician, and obviously with a dentist anesthesiologist. But I guess the question during, and I'm fine taking a little break because I would like to find this out. And we certainly have the time, I hope, to do it. But did the dentist ever have a permit, or is the withdrawal just based on the application for a permit that was never approved?
Yeah, to my knowledge, and I can confirm this, she's never had a permit in the state of Arizona.
Okay. All right. So let's.
Other than the 1304. Sorry to interrupt you.
Right. Correct. So let's do that. Ryan, why don't you guys, whoever can look into that, we'll hold off on that for right now. And we can come back and revisit. But I don't mind moving on. Is everybody okay moving on?
Sure.
Okay.
Move on. Yep.
So
yeah. Do you want to take a vote on that motion for the investigative interview?
We did. Didn't we?
Oh, you did.
Oh. It was approved. I see this as a separate issue, but when we get more information, I'll sort of tease that out a little bit. So the next thing, while we're going to come back and revisit this agenda item B19, we are now on to agenda item B23, case number 2022-00184. So let me just get there. So where I'm at with this, in my review, based on the consultant's report, what we see here is that there was, of the allegations that were listed, and I just want to make sure, there are six allegations, and of the six, two were substantiated in the area of misrepresentation of a fee for a new patient, and then billing. And so I certainly want to open it up for discussion, but what my thought was on this, I think there was just some misunderstanding, though I don't disagree with some of the conclusions that the investigator made, but I was looking at possible non-disciplinary versus disciplinary. So I guess the first question is there a feeling of the committee that there was a statutory violation? So let's start there.
So for the, if I'm reading the statute header right, it says repeated. Doesn't that mean more than one occurrence?
Yes.
So then to me, it's not a violation of the statute if this is only a one-time thing, unless I'm reading it wrong.
Which sort of begs the question that would always be hard for us to technically, unless there was history.
Oh, I know. I'm just wondering. I mean, I'm not the one that wrote the statute, so I'm just saying.
No, I understand. I hear you.
I don't like the word repeated because it kind of is, do we need an attorney's? Because I agree with what you're saying. It would be a violation if, I don't know how to read that, repeated irregularities.
I would, this is Seamus. I would just encourage you to read it as it's stated. we have to, you know, give meaning to every word. And so, you know, I think, maybe what that statute is probably saying too is that if you find one and not a pattern of behavior, then that could have been, you know, that could really have been a mistake possibly and not a practice, if that helps.
Yeah, I guess that's how I was reading it. So then I would go with more what you said, Tony, either a letter of concern or non-disciplinary action on that one.
Okay. Thoughts about a letter of concern over a non-disciplinary action?
I mean, I'm looking, I get, think more of a letter of concern because we don't know if this is a one time misunderstanding or there's a pattern here.
Okay.
How would we know if there's a pattern?
We don't.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question. Will we know if there was a pattern if we went to prior board complaints that were resolved? If this, we saw a pattern there, would that be the pattern?
The board has to do that, right? The board has to look at.
No, but I'm talking about when a dentist has a action, it's recorded on the board's website. So that's what I mean. Wouldn't there be a prior history if there were other actions? Would that be?
That's a great question, committee member Dodell. And I think that what you'd want to do is just focus your attention on the facts of this case with respect to a violation in this case and not try to pull in older cases or other cases.
No, Seamus, I understand that. But I mean, I hate that word repeated. That's really throwing me up here.
Well, let me help you here, though.
I encourage you to look at repeated in this, in the context of the facts you have in this case.
So David, let's ask this question.
Okay.
In the licensee's response, this is on page 3331. They said the $29 special is typically for new patients that do not have insurance. Mm-hmm. If you have insurance, then no problem. We will still submit the insurance claim and then write off the remaining that the insurance company denies. So I think by virtue of that statement, I think it is a common practice for this dentist to do that because that's what they're saying they do, right?
Okay. And then I would agree with that, and they shouldn't be writing off payments.
I think that's the point, and I think that's what the issue is here, is that I appreciate you saying that. It's not appropriate to write off what the insurance doesn't pay, correct?
Right. And I would agree that if they have a $29 special, that's what they should be billing the insurance company, not the full fee.
Okay.
So my thoughts pattern is now shifted to going with you.
And Karen, what do you think of that? Do you agree, or do you see that based on what the dentist had, how the dentist responded, that this is something that they do in their practice?
And so doesn't that beg the conversation with the insurance company? So if you do bill a regular price, not $29, then which is your real fee? It's not $29, or is it? So yeah,
Karen, that would only be if you're contracted. If you're a fee for service, you can bill anything.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But the thing is, they shouldn't. If you bill the patient $29, you're supposed to bill the insurance $29. You can't bill two differences.
Yes.
So I think there's agreement with what the consultant concluded in that there was a misrepresentation of the fee, the discounted fee that was offered. And then with respect to billing, you shouldn't be writing off what the insurance doesn't pay.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I have a question on that. Why not? Why can't you write off what the insurance doesn't pay?
Because actually, Deb, on the bottom of a claim form, it says the fee you are submitting. It actually says that's what you're signing. I would have to pull a claim form, but I know there's some verbiage on a claim form that says you attest that the fee you're billing is the fee you billed the patient or something to that effect.
Well, that's true. But in the end, say, for example, in the end, the patient doesn't pay that balance, and eventually it's written off as an accounting thing.
But are you talking about writing it off because they didn't pay it and they didn't want to try to collect it, or they waived it because
Yeah, but I think that's kind of splitting hairs too. I mean, to me, it always seems like it would be the business owner's discretion whether they choose not to balance bill. But be that as it may, if that policy is set forth, you know, if the policy is to the patient who presents this $29 coupon, if it's explained to them that, well, it's for patients without insurance, since you do have insurance, this is what we're going to do. I actually don't see that as being fraudulent to anyone.
I agree, as long as it's disclosed on that coupon.
Right, right. So I think the issue then becomes is the disclosure there? Rather than the practice itself, is the disclosure appropriate? That's how I see this.
Right. But I guess going to what Tony said, what they're claiming in the response is, if you have insurance, that's not a problem. We'll submit it for the $29 for the full fee and then write off mm-hmm. if it doesn't cover it. That I think is the problem.
Yeah.
So Umar, do you have thoughts on this?
I was just under the assumption, whatever special you have, the fee, you have to charge that to all patients, irrespective of whether they have insurance or not. So I agree with Dr. Dodell. They should be, if it's a $29 special, you should be billing that out for all your patients, irrespective of insurance or not.
Specials can always have conditions.
I don't think that's what I was saying. I said you can bill any patient. I mean, when I was in practice, if I had a patient for some reason, it was a comprehensive exam that went much longer than normal, I would bill them more money and explain that to them up front. Because if I say my normal comprehensive exam took 30 minutes and all of a sudden this is a massive case with medical issues and consulting time and whatever, and I knew I was going to spend an hour. Mm-hmm. Or perfect example is my hygienist maybe had a patient who was a heavy smoker and was going to have to spend an hour and a half because they were going to be removing so much stain. I would charge that patient an increased fee. Now, I would submit it to their insurance. If I was contracted, I may have to write it off based on the contract. But if I'm not contracted, I can build the difference.
Okay.
I know some offices, like let's say for a comp exam, they'll bill out like $500 every time because different insurances pay different. So they want to try to bill out the highest amount.
Well, that.
That's not right.
And then they just, they bill it out, but then they just write off the difference.
So I think that's what Deb is sort of asking.
Yeah.
Is a write off fraudulent?
Well, I think.
Lack of trying to collect is fraudulent.
Right. If they attempt to collect it and they don't collect, then you're writing it off as a bad debt. That's different than making it a normal business practice. I guess that's what I was trying to explain.
I think that's what I'm trying to wrap my head around too is because part of me and my understanding, my little bit of understanding with this is the insurance company has an expectation that you're collecting the fee that you are charging out. They're going to pay their portion, but to the point that someone said earlier, I think it might have been Deb, there is that idea of balance billing. So here's the balance, and this is what we expect you to pay. But the question is, if you write that off, is that not your discretion or?
Hold on. I'm trying to find the ADA claim form so I can read the verbiage because.
That will help.
So if you offer a special, let's say it's $29, and someone comes in with whatever insurance company, should we be billing that insurance company out $29 as well? Or should we just be billing out our accepted fee?
Again, not if the special was conditional. The special is conditional upon a new patient without insurance.
Correct.
And that's what the respondent said, that this was just because it was a patient of record. It was not a new patient.
And they had insurance. So in theory, that special didn't apply.
Didn't apply.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
But Deb, what you're saying makes sense. It all depends on if they're doing false advertising or not. Does it say in their fine print
what is included, what's not. Because as we know, a lot of people do false advertising to get the patient in and then charge in different ways. So it all depends on the fine print as well, which I don't think we have access to any of those.
Right, and that's what I was saying earlier, that it's about the disclosure, or in that case, the fine print of the advertising to draw people in falsely.
I don't see anything on the claim form, David. I'm looking at one.
I'm looking at one, trying to find it. Give me a second.
And I can understand if you're contracted with an insurance company, you're going to have a whole other set of rules as to what you can do and what you can't do.
So is the general sense here that there was a misunderstanding in communication? Because I think the consultant kind of identified this too. Because really, the patient technically wasn't a new patient. But if the dentist would have just said, okay, fine, we're going to let you pay the $29 and be done with it. I mean, I do kind of agree in the sense that if the dentist is willing to take whatever insurance pays for and write the other balance off, I mean, what was that difference? We're probably not talking a significant amount of money, I would have to imagine, of what their normal fee for an exam is. So the question becomes, are we talking more, and maybe this is the larger issue here, are we talking more about how dentist communication is going on versus the actual actions that occurred with regards to the billing? And so maybe a letter of concern is more thoughtful in this particular circumstance than anything else. What are thoughts about that?
I'm fine with that.
Yes, I'm fine with that.
And David?
I'm good.
So I think what we want to do then is, let's just do this. Let's go back to, and I think the consultant kind of said it pretty nicely. And if I don't find it, I think we can kind of gather the,
So I was just going to add, I'm mistaken. So what I guess is in the ADA Code of Ethics, they talk about this with waiving a copayment, saying that the verbiage is, the essence of this ethical impropriety is deception and misrepresentation. Overbilling dentists makes it appear to the third party that the charge to the patient for services rendered is higher than it actually was.
But that's not what's happening here.
That's not, yeah. That's not,
I'm going back to what we were
talking about. No, right. We're that's fine. April?
So we're all in the room together. It's actually Ryan. If you want to look at ARS 1201, I think it's 14.
120114?
No, just 120114, the definition of.
Oh.
Irregularities in billing. And then F as in Frank talks about abrogation of the copayment. I don't know if that addresses anything or answers or helps answer any of your questions related to this billing practice, but there's several there, but F is, I think, specific to what you're talking about.
You said 1201.14?
1201.14. Yeah.
Why did it send
1201.14 in definitions. So it's in 1201, not 1201.01.
1201.
And then number 14 does say, but that's falsely, you're falsely saying what you intend, what you are going to bill, and or that you're, so if that's their normal charges, that's their normal charges. So there was nothing fraudulent or irregular in that billing.
Yeah, I think that what we're going to do is we're going to recommend a letter of concern emphasizing the importance of good patient communication regarding billing and collection procedures.
And maybe even about what they advertise is in terms of their specials. Okay. That it's clear to people how that special is going to be applied.
Well, and I think that's where he's maybe advertising as a whole, just, you know, but I just think the gist of the letter of concern is, you know, thoughtful, patient communication regarding, billing practices. And I think that advertising and billing practices, how's that?
That sounds good.
Are people fine with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So can I get a motion to recommend a letter of concern as, just, discussed?
Motion.
MTIs, second. Berrigan.
Yes. Sorry.
And April, did you guys get that okay, the gist of what we would like to see in that letter?
Yes, we did. Thank you.
So, roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Todell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
MTIs?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. Ryan?
So, I don't know if you want to call that previous case. I don't remember the number. Two.
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, 175. I can help. Do you want to call it first and then I'll answer?
Sure. So we'll go back to, agenda item, B19, case number 2022-00175. Go ahead.
So I have Susie also in here. So she may kick me if I'm saying something incorrect. So he handles the permitting process. Susie, has stated that, the applicant filed a permit application for, I said 1301 or 1302. She confirmed it, the 1302 permit in March. She failed the evaluation with a schedule or a, what's the violation?
A category two violation.
Failure. So then she couldn't, have another evaluation until August, and she went in August and she failed again. And then after that, she was going to try to schedule another evaluation. And then there was all kinds of other mitigating things in her office that prevented her from meeting those expectations to do a third evaluation. And then ultimately at that same time applied for a 1304 permit and was granted a 1304 permit, but never has held any permit for anesthesia and sedation in the state of Arizona other than the current 1304 in August. Did I get it right?
Yes.
And Susie's here to answer more questions if you need.
No, that was, so just to confirm, prior to the application for the 1302, the licensee has not ever been in a possession of, any permit other than the current 1304.
That's correct.
Okay. So, the issue to kind of discuss here with you all, going back to the chart note that I was referencing earlier that was on page 2861. It's also in the consultant's report, if you might have seen it, which is 2763. But basically, the way our rules currently read, a dentist can administer up to the manufacturer's recommended dose of a drug up to its max, basically, with or without nitrous, as long as the intended level of sedation to be achieved for that appointment is minimal sedation. So, while it's very difficult to make that determination, and I don't know that I saw a record anyway, so I don't know that we would have any sense of that. The issue here is that's for what we would call enteral drug administration. And basically for the layperson, enteral means by mouth. And that means you have to swallow it, and it has to go through your GI, your stomach, and then your GI system through your liver, and then go on to have its effect. When you crush a medication and place it under a patient's tongue for what we would call sublingual administration, you are now bypassing the enteral route. So the practice of crushing up a drug and placing it under a patient's drug, tongue, excuse me, is parenteral sedation, which would require a minimally a 1302 permit or a 1301. If you had a 1304, you could have that person do it, but there's no indication that another provider was involved with this particular case. From everything that's identified, this was done by the dentist themselves. So if that's the case, then there's a significant violation here that this dentist was administering sedation by a route that they were not permitted to provide. And so that's an issue that
interesting.
We need to kind of at least have a sense of, but it, my concern, obviously putting on my anesthesia hat, is we could be putting a patient at risk of over sedation and have obviously deleterious outcomes by virtue of that, particularly when you're not prepared or trained to a level. And that's obviously what the permits are for, is to ensure that you have a minimal level of training to appropriately treat patients that are rendered at those different levels of sedation per the permit that you have. Well, in light of a dentist not having a permit at all and administering a level of sedation that would otherwise require a permit is an issue.
Anthony, do you need a permit to do a sedative drug alongside nitrous or no?
No. As long as you don't, you violate the rules, which are you can administer that singular sedative drug up to 1.5 times its MRD, which in this case with Halcyon, it could be up to 0.75. So there's no argument with how or which drug was used and the amount that was administered. The issue becomes how it was administered. It was administered parenterally and not enterally.
The route.
Yeah. And that's a problem. It violates the rules. That's a significant rule violation. My concern is that I guess I even have sort of a larger concern knowing that the dentist attempted to get a permit and wasn't able to get it, that they sort of did this. I mean, I want to maybe give them the benefit of the doubt, and sort of following Seamus's guidance about trying not to read too much into these things, that maybe they didn't understand or know that, but it is a violation of our rules. In order to administer drugs parenterally, you need to possess either as the sole provider, meaning the dentist doing it, you need to have in your possession a 1301 or 1302 permit. And the dentist didn't have that. So I think we need to at least consider recommending to the board that this dentist violated, and since Susie is with us, she can tell me the proper citation, but it's in Article 13, and it's the section on, really, we'd have to go with 1302, I would believe, because that's for parenteral. April.
So, again, it's Ryan, but the 1300, yes, that would be the correct citation. The additional thing you could do is still keep, since you passed the motion for an investigative interview, those are some of the questions that you can ask and then make a determination after that. I do think you already have a violation for administering anesthesia without a permit. And that would be addressed, that you could wait until after the investigative interview and wrap it all up in one package and submit that recommendation to the board. or you can resend what you currently do, what you currently have, which is just the interview, and recommend something entirely different.
I can tell all of you on my end, I'm fine with doing the investigative interview and then making a recommendation in total at that time, not doing separate actions, if the committee is okay with that.
I agree.
I am. I'm okay with that.
Yes. I would recommend as well.
So you would just make a motion to continue this to the investigative review. I mean, the investigative interview, sorry.
Okay. So in light of the fact that I wasn't more thoughtful when we initiated this conversation, I'll accept a motion to include the discussion regarding
Sorry, Dr. Caputo, I don't think you need another motion because the statute already allows you to do the investigative interview. And
okay. So we'll just include this then in that. That's fine.
Exactly.
All right. Fair enough. Okay, well, that was all that I had to add on that, so there was nothing else. So we can now move on to agenda item B24, case number 2022-00187. Okay. So what we see here are three allegations. This was not an easy case for a variety of reasons. But the just to begin with the allegations, the investigator concluded that all three allegations were substantiated. From my thoughts, I mean, in terms of a violation, I absolutely believe there's a violation here. And I'm just getting to my notes. I had listed violations of 32, 12, 101, 13, and 25. Let's start there. So is there agreement that there's violation? Anyone?
Yes.
Which violation are you talking about?
So, and I'm sorry, I might have just gone a little too fast. I said 32, 12, 01, 01, 13, and 25.
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion regarding those violations? Are there additional, or is everybody fine with those two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I would entertain a motion that we recommend to the full board violation of 32, 12, 01, 01, 13, and 25. And do I have a motion for that?
Motion.
Dodell, second?
Second.
Motihari? And further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari.
Yes.
Just due to what I see, this is to me a very severe situation. I was very unhappy about everything presented here. So in light of that, and I think it's pretty egregious what I'm reading. But one thing I would like to ask, can we get a report from staff about prior, actions against this dentist or licensee?
Staff did not review or did not look up the priors because we were told that the committee would not be allowed to ask them.
Okay. I thought we resolved that last time.
So, Anthony, this case, the doctor just won't turn the records over, has no imaging for it's. It's just, it's a shit show.
It seemed like they didn't seem to care, right? So one of the thoughts I had is a recommendation for revocation or suspension of license. Any thoughts on that?
Or an offer to
surrender?
Give up, yes, surrender. Because if he's semi-retired, living in California, isn't this the doctor that's that?
And, correct.
Yeah. So if he has no intention of practicing in here anymore, he can surrender. I suppose the question is, what do you want to go on his record? Does a license surrender get reported to the National Practitioners Database?
The surrender acts as a revocation.
Okay.
Sorry, Ryan.
Yeah.
You're good. But to address the former question, voluntary surrender, the board can be a little more lenient than in a revocation. In a revocation, you're taking the license. In a voluntary surrender, you kind of give and take a little bit to get the voluntary surrender. So it can be a little less harsh, if I'm saying that correctly, Seamus.
So on that point, Brian, I guess where I'm kind of going at with this is, obviously it's the board's decision, but would we just make a recommendation that they either consider one or the other and let them decide, or do we just give them one option?
Ryan, do you care if I take this one?
No, yeah, feel free.
So your motion basically would be to move the matter forward to a formal hearing for revocation, and in the interim, offer a consent agreement for voluntary surrender.
Okay. Is the committee comfortable with that, or thoughts, comments, otherwise?
Yes.
I would say redo all the educations.
And if I hear you correctly, Mindy, you mean recommend CE as well?
Definitely there is some huge knowledge gap maybe as you said it, care. I don't know if it's a care or just lack of knowledge or combination of all together.
Well, I mean, when you say you lost your computer and you lost records, kind of reminds me of that's like the 2022 version of the dog ate my homework. But having said that, I guess then the next question, and I don't disagree with you. I guess this is just my ignorance. So asking Ryan or Seamus, is it appropriate if you're recommending revocation with the possibility of a surrender to also include disciplinary CE? Excuse me.
You can put anything in there, but this is one of those things that I would consider not putting in there simply because if you're going to take somebody's license, you don't have any teeth. No, sorry to call upon at the end to get them to do something if you've taken their license.
It sounds like it's contradicting itself.
No, and that's fine. I think that's in our head. And so I don't disagree with where Mindy was because I kind of had the same kind of thought. So it's just good. And I don't disagree either. I just think it's helpful for us all to hear that. So. I would like to entertain a motion to do exactly what Seamus said.
Motion.
I move, yeah, or second, whichever.
You just said it so well, Seamus, that I didn't want to try to repeat it. and did staff get that okay? April?
I don't know what the recommendation is.
So, Seamus, could you just reiterate what you said? It was perfect.
The recommendation was to recommend moving the matter forward to formal hearing for revocation of licensure, and in the interim, offering a consent agreement for voluntary surrender.
Mm-hmm. And so I had a first by Kappa, second by Dodell.
Sure.
Okay. Further discussion?
I'm really hesitant. Revocation of someone's license, just pretty rough. I'm just having second thoughts. I'm just wondering, can we ask him? So you're proposing that he surrender his license or not revoking it?
We're proposing that we pursue revocation with the opportunity for the licensee to surrender.
Before.
And again, remember, surrender is a revocation. It's just called a surrender. It's a disciplinary act. It's reported. So it is a revocation.
Yeah. Correct. But it's allowing them that pathway versus going and doing it more formally, right?
Well, it really just saves time and money.
Sure.
I think I'm just going to abstain on this. I don't feel like I'm qualified enough on that to offer an opinion on.
And that's fine. And obviously that's, but that's the case. And, or can, what is that? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Just abstain.
MTIs?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, thank you. All right. Next, we are on agenda item B25, case number 2022-00191. And I'm just going to let myself get there. Okay, so what I'm seeing on this one, and this was a little weird for me, so I'll kind of read over it, obviously, because we all did, but just to kind of reemphasize what the consultant wrote and then what I sort of think about it based on what the consultant wrote. So the allegation was failure to medicate, to which the consultant concluded that it was substantiated, but only due to lack of records, which mm-hmm. I sort of struggled with. They did go on to say there's a lack of records that are presented. Treatment plans and consents are not there. And there was a lack of x-rays provided. So I do see the concerns in terms of records. But I think that's the issue versus the failure to medicate is kind of where I ended up leaning. And so I looked at this as a non-disciplinary approach mm-hmm. for CE and record keeping and versus a violation. So I'll open it up there for discussion.
That's exactly where I landed.
I would agree with you too.
Okay.
Me too.
I agree.
Okay, so
I agree as well.
I would put forward a recommendation to the board of non-disciplinary CE in the amount of 4 CEUs in record keeping.
Well, do we have to find what the violation is first?
Oh, I don't know. Is there a violation for non-disciplinary?
No, you do not have to.
Oh, sorry, my mistake.
Yeah.
So okay. Fair enough?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can I get a motion?
Motion.
We'll go first, Motihari, second, Kappas.
Yes.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
All right, so that was just 25. So if I'm looking at my notes correctly, we are now on agenda item B31, case number 2022-00214. So I'll just get down to that on my listing here. So what we see here, based on the consultant's report, I'll get down to his conclusion on page, looks like 4616. Allegation 1 and 2 were unsubstantiated regarding the impact failure and the return of money, but there is a concern about record keeping, and there was a concern regarding the torque settings on the implant. And so in light of what the consultant concluded, I was going to recommend non-disciplinary CE in 4 units in record keeping for this case. Open for discussion.
I agree.
That's fair. Yeah.
It's very similar to the prior case.
Correct. Okay. Can I get a motion?
Motion.
Dodell?
Second.
Second, Berrigan. Further discussion? Did staff get that okay, April?
There we go.
Yes.
Okay, roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm struggling a little bit here now. It's 3:11. It just seems way too early. I was going to maybe have us take an hour break and then come back and do the final case, or you guys just want to go ahead and do it now?
Can we do it, get it over with, please?
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with finishing for a change a little bit early.
Or I could be very argumentative for the next hour, and we can
get to this point. Okay.
Yes, David and his feisty self. So
here we are. This is our final item, agenda item B33, case number 2022.
Oh yeah, 33.
00216. Okay. So what we see here. Is a allegation of inadequate crown, as well as, I think there was a request for restitution. And then in the conclusion, by the, consultant that is on page 4894, it was substantiated. And this was another torquing issue of the implant that seemed to be pretty significant. And then similar to what we saw in a previous case, it looks like the breakdown that the consultant is identified for restitution is – and I didn't sum these up. But basically, after insurance, there was $1,432 for the placement of the implant, $636 for the abutment, and then $943 for the implant crown, which I believe the consultant is intending for that entire amount, whatever the total ends up being, to be returned to the patient. So my notes on this were in agreement with the consultant, but I do consider this to be a disciplinary issue. I listed violation of 32.1201, 13 and 25. So I'd like to at least start there to see if there's an agreement that there was a violation of those two statutes.
So I have a question. Maybe someone can point it out to me. The consultant said that the implant screw was torqued in the wrong direction. Maybe I'm missing it. How did they come to that conclusion? I agree how there's documentation about it being over torqued, but it talks about the wrong direction. Did I miss something in the notes that said it?
No, it's there, David. I just have to look because the dentist did indicate they over-torqued it.
No, I agree with you. The consultant's conclusion was, I'm not disagreeing with your conclusion in what we should do. I'm just saying the consultant says this was a careless turning of the screw in the wrong direction. That's different than over-torquing it.
Okay, it says here, this is on page 4891.
Let me go
in the chart note that's there.
Okay, let me go there, sorry. Yeah, it says in an attempt to remove the healing cap, torque was increased to over 50, which right. I agree is over-torquing, but it doesn't mean it's in the wrong direction.
I guess maybe that's...
They could be over-torquing in the right direction.
Maybe his intention was just to identify the point that it was over-torqued.
Yeah, I just think we need to clarify it because it was in the wrong direction. It was just over-torqued. I don't know how they came to it. I just was having a problem how they came to that conclusion of it being the wrong direction.
Correct. And I would say I would agree with that because I don't know that they would be able to know that either. And that's
why. Right. And I just want to make it clear. But I agree with you. If we're making a disciplinary action, it should be accurate based on it was over-torqued. Not the wrong direction.
All right. So we'll just make a note, maybe just highlight to staff that we're not going to address the direction of the torque. It was just that it was over-torqued.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And the only reason I bring this up is to me, if you're talking the wrong direction, you don't know what you're doing more than you just over-torqued it. If that makes more sense.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just trying to draw this out for Mindy for another hour.
Oh, I see.
Thank you. Love the consideration.
I just do it for Mindy. Nobody else. You can all leave.
Okay. So other discussion about violation of 13 and 25. So motion to find the recommend violation of 32.1201. 13 and 25.
Anthony, I had a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
It said the doctor moved to Oklahoma and is not coming back or cares about his Arizona license. So does he have to still comply with this or?
Mm-hmm. So what happens in this case, Umar, and great question, by the way. And this is something that Seamus has helped us on in the past as well. We're taking action based on the fact that the only information we have is that at present, the dentist still has an active license in Arizona. And so because they have an active license, this, whatever is decided by the board then becomes something that is obligated to the dentist. What they do and decide beyond that is up to them. Does that help?
Sounds good.
Okay. But yeah, so I mean, if he says, well, what do I mean, we had that with another case and it's really up to that person at that point. If they decide I'm not even going to renew my license, whatever they want to do, that's on them. But we would still take actions as an action based on the fact that their license is still active.
And wouldn't it also affect them if they ever wanted to reinstate
the license? Well, sure, yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, that's why I agree with you, Tony. We need to decide it as this, they may either decide to continue their license or come want another license in the future.
Fair enough. Okay. So we had a motion that was moved by Kappas, and I needed a second.
I'll second.
Second by Dodell. Further discussion. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Oh, look at that. I did actually add those numbers up. I got $3,011. Wow, I should have looked at my own notes. All right, so in terms of recommended action, I was recommending 8 CE hours in record keeping and implants. Thoughts on that?
I think it should be broken down into two separate things.
Okay.
Say 4 hours.
Four in record keeping, or do we want to just do risk management as we discussed before?
Risk management seems to be the catch-all.
All right. So 4 in risk management and 4 in implants. And do we want to specify anything, diagnosis and placement or restoration?
I think it's more in the implant itself, the over-torquing. I'm also concerned that he didn't wait for any osteointegration before putting the implant. He was putting the crown like literally the same day.
So implant restoration?
That's what I was actually going to suggest, more like 6 hours, because if you combine multiple things, you can't go for 6 hours. Implant has a lot.
And when you say 6 hours, what do you in implants, Mindy, or
yeah, everything? I was talking about implant only. So 4 hours for practice management and 6 hours for implant. It could be treatment planning, diagnosis, all of them together, restoration.
It's like almost an implant 101 course.
Yeah, exactly.
But 10 hours total.
10 hours total, yeah.
So 4 hours in risk management and 6 hours in implants.
Correct. And then you can break those down, because restoration, placement, those are by itself a lot of CEs that are available, actually.
And it allows the board to make to use that at their discretion, too, when they're making the plan. So that's fine. Terry.
I don't know if it makes a difference or not, but Dr. Noble did file for bankruptcy before he left Arizona. He's living in Owosso, Texas right now. I just wanted to bring that up.
That's fine. Other comments, thoughts? So we're good on the CE recommendation then?
Yes. I am. Yeah.
Okay. So motion to recommend 10 hours of disciplinary CE, 4 hours in risk management, and 6 hours in implants.
Yes.
Can I get a motion?
Motion.
Dodell?
Second.
Second, Berrigan. April?
Did you want to include restitution in that?
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, restitution in the amount of $3,011. Which does, and that's the part I do agree with you, Terry, because I think he had indicated that in his response and said he would have refunded the patient had he had his practice still in place. But I do think it's an important thing to at least identify.
Mm-hmm.
But fair enough. Yes, so restitution in the amount of $3,011 to be included with that disciplinary CE as identified. So we have a first and second. Did you get those okay, April?
Yes, thank you.
Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Rodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, so that concludes agenda item 4, and then just so staff is on the same page, we have 4 cases that are being moved to our next meeting due to inability to discuss for conflicts and quorum that we already identified. So moving on. So do we have any new committee members to consider, Ryan? Did we get anything yet?
So this was, we were going to give you guys a list, and then at the last, I don't know if it was the last meeting or the previous meeting before that, the committee said that you guys wanted to work with your own peer groups to come with names. And to date, we've only received three, I'll say, applicants. And so they're not included in this packet because we thought you wanted a little more robust than three.
Okay.
You wanted to do the peer group as opposed to us advertising. Do you now want us to advertise instead?
No. I think that's fine. I just spoke with a dentist recently, and so she's interested, and hopefully we'll get her. You guys didn't happen to get any. I don't think you would have because I had her send it to me. But her name is Katie Martin. Is that meaningful to you at all?
Hi, this is Gomez Borges. So I have not received her resume yet.
But okay.
I encourage everyone to go ahead and just spread the word so that we can get additional resumes as soon as possible.
And how many positions are we looking to fill?
Two.
Two?
Yes, sir.
All right, so we have two more. Currently, we have three. A fourth is coming based on someone that I was connected with. So, yes. And then reiterating what Ryan said, if any of you happen to know anyone that you would find appropriate or interested in serving in a capacity on this committee, that would be great. We had an endodontist. Are any of the applicants that you guys have, Ryan, endodontists?
Yeah, I think we have one.
Oh, good. So, and then Katie Martin, who I have connected with and is interested, is a periodontist. So that would be good for us as well. So I think that gives us a pretty good representation of specialists. I think just so we all know, Dr. Berrigan is an orthodontist, correct?
I hope so.
Karen, you're orthodontist?
Yes, sorry.
That's okay. Dr. Imtiaz is a pediatric dentist. David, general dentist.
Yep.
Dr. Motihari, general dentist.
Correct.
Deb, are you practicing?
No, I'm not.
So, but a hygienist.
Many years.
And I'm sure you all know I'm an anesthesiologist. So, and Dr. Fukami is an anesthesiologist. Dr. Kalamchi is an oral surgeon. And who else wasn't with us today?
Harris.
Dr. Harris.
Dr. Oh, Skip. And yeah, Skip. Don't tell him I forgot about him. And Dr. Harris is an oral surgeon. So I think maybe we want to consider if we have an endodontist, which I think is important, and a periodontist, which I think is important. Gosh, well, that's fine. Maybe that's where we focus on. So who are the other applicants that you guys have, Ryan?
One, well, I can't remember. One is a general dentist. I think his last name starts with a P. Oh my gosh. Okay.
And general dentist.
Yeah. And then Tron Hagel. He's the endodontist.
Okay.
And what was the other one?
Kovar? Dr. Kovar is a general dentist.
And he's a general dentist as well.
Okay. So I'd really like, I think an endodontist would be really helpful to us. So if anybody knows of any endodontist that would be interested, that could make that listing more robust, as well as another periodontist. So, okay. I would ask, if you guys haven't done this already, to put the 2023 dates into your calendars. As we've already discussed, they are all Tuesday afternoons. I think some attempt was made to kind of put, what is it, at least 4 weeks in between meeting dates. Does that sound about right, Ryan?
Yeah, we tried to we tried a couple near the board meetings as well.
Okay.
Just for timeliness on due process, showing due process to the licensees. So about 4 weeks.
Okay. So, but please get those dates that are listed into your calendars, just so we don't end up with any issues, problems, or otherwise, as things get near. And our next meeting is on the 31st of January in the new year, very last day of the month. Anything that we need to discuss that we haven't already, anything from staff, Ryan, or Seamus, are we good?
I don't have anything. I know Yasmin raised her hand.
Oh, sorry. Let me get back to that screen. Go ahead, Yasmin.
Do we need the committee to approve the 2023 committee meeting dates?
Oh, yeah. So these dates, we put them on there. I think they've been on here 2 months. Seamus would probably agree that they're probably not all going to fit everybody's schedule super neat and tidy, but we try to give them out a year in advance. So we really just want looking for a motion so we can start scheduling the meetings on the board calendar.
So go ahead and approve them.
Yeah, just get a motion in a second.
Sure. So can I get a motion to approve the proposed dates listed in agenda item 6 for 2023?
Motion.
So I'm going to go ahead and give it to MTS and Kappas. Further discussion? Roll call.
Saputo?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Berrigan?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
And I'll for sure reach out to Skip, but I can tell you I will not be here on the 31st of January. I teach my local anesthesia and pain control module with the dental students that week, and that's actually my first day of lecture, so that's a pretty full day. Oh, you know what, though? They do an afternoon thing. I'll confirm, but I'm going to probably say maybe for right now. But actually, I might be available. I think now I'm just lecturing in the morning. So anyways, just putting that out there. All right. I think we've got everything covered. So in light of her previous request, Dr. Motihari, would you like to do the honors?
I would love to do that. I know how difficult it is for everybody to leave, but
you could just say that we are adjourned at 3:33.
At 3:33. I'm very honored to take that on. Thank you, Dr.
Well, thank you, everybody.
Great job.